Excuse me. I'd like to remind all participants this conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Thank you very much, Kelly. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the Who Is call on the 16th of April, 2012. On the call today, we have Rafiq Demak, Anne Nastiger, Steve Metallitz, Cynthia Zuknanan, Michael Young, and Susan Parsons. From staff, we have Barry Cobb, Liz Gaster, and myself, Matthew Peregrine. And we have apologies from Avi Doria and Don Blumenfeld. I'd like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you.
All right. Thank you very much, and thanks everybody for coming to the call. So we have made some progress since we last, and so we'll review that in the course of the agenda, but let's start by opening up the agenda for see if anyone wants to add or modify it. So looking at the agenda on the Adobe Connect screen, does anyone have any changes or alterations they would like to add to it?
This is okay. Steve Metallitz. Could I just ask a question? So we're going to only review, are we going to review the entire survey questionnaire, or are we just going to focus on these three questions first?
I think the goal was to focus on the three in the call, Steve, although this is open for discussion. But the idea was to focus on these three, if you will, more difficult areas. That are a little outstanding, and then do a final review on the list for because Cintra's done an editing pass recently that I'd like everybody to go through.
Okay, that's fine. Maybe if we have time, we can get into some other questions, but I'm happy to start with these.
Absolutely. If we have enough time on the call, then we'll just keep adding discussion basically under new business.
Thank you.
Okay. So Barry, do you want to walk us through a review of the last set of action items we had and where we've progressed on some of those things?
Yes. This is Barry. Starting with the first action item was assigned to me, and that's basically to schedule the SOAC roadshow webinars. Over, I think it was about 2 weeks ago, we met with Don to discuss what the webinar would look like. There was a little bit of a disconnect in terms of what the webinar was going to be for. I think originally the webinar was supposed to be to reach out and collaborate with the SOACs for input into the survey questions, which we basically have already constructed, and still need to figure out if, you know, how the working group wants to approach this. BNPOW, we have pretty much a good working draft now, and whether we want to move forward with the roadshow per se once we release the draft out to the GNSO, or anyway, figure out how that works. So I have that set at pending right now.
Okay. Barry, my understanding of the purpose of the roadshow, and, you know, everybody jump in if you had a different understanding, but my understanding of it was that we were basically prepping people and making them aware of the posting we were about to do for public comment so that they understand the context around it, what we're trying to survey in general terms, and hopefully, you know, that'll help avoid any, you know, misunderstanding or confusion about what we're attempting to learn from the survey and result in more constructive comments on it versus, you know, maybe reactive ones because people think we're inadvertently delving into areas we're not trying to.
And, Michael, this is Barry. That was my understanding as well, That was a kind of a slightly different discussion when we met with Don, so I wanted to bring it back to the working group and figure out how we wanted to approach it overall.
Okay. You know, I'll throw out a thought and see how other people feel, but my thought is I think our original intention was a clean one. And, you know, I can volunteer to do a follow-up talk with Don. I'm overdue with that anyways, about his understanding of what we're trying to do with the presentation. Does anyone disagree with that, or would anyone feel strongly about repurposing or redirecting the intent of this roadshow to familiarize people with what we're doing?
This is Steve Metalitz. I guess I had a question about this. Is the goal to encourage people to participate in responding to the survey, or is the goal to give people input to the survey before it's posted? I'm not clear on that.
Kind of a bit of both, Steve. I guess in the short term is to get the various stakeholder groups that we do the roadshow for to look at this draft version of the survey and tell us if there's something else that they really feel strongly belongs in the survey, and then we can assess that and see if it fits our scope and our mandate to give us an opportunity to fine-tune the survey. And then, obviously, you know, once those memberships are aware of what's going on, we hope that that will encourage response rates when we actually put the survey out.
I guess my sense is that it's hard to do both those things at once. If you have a call before the webinar before the survey is posted and get feedback, there could be some additional changes, and it could be a while before the survey is posted, and I just don't know how much follow-through effect there would be if we have the webinar in, you know, May and the survey is not posted till July. I mean, those might not be the right dates, but I think you see what I'm saying.
So I think
we should either focus it on one or the other, and I would certainly support the idea of getting some input from the community before the survey is posted, I suppose.
Okay, I'm with you. I think probably the priority should be on having them look at a draft of the survey and making sure that they feel that we captured everything that they feel is appropriate and that also fits in the scope of our charter as a priority. I guess what we could do is when we get closer to actually releasing the survey for people to actually take, we could look at other, I guess the term would be promotional activities we can do to make people say, hey, make people aware, fully aware that the survey is now out and ready. And Barry, maybe ICANN staff, has some ideas and some thoughts about how to help us, you know, raise the flag once the survey's out.
This is Barry. Absolutely. And we'll take this one offline, Michael, and we'll get with Don and circle back and make sure that we get the right approach and move it forward from there.
Okay. Anyone else other than Steve and myself have thoughts or comments, or is everyone else happy with that?
This is Ann Nostiger. I agree that the focus that we're discussing should be the focus, but I do think it's possible to achieve both. From my old political days, and it's in a sense an advanced team going out and getting people ready for an idea, and I think it at least gets it on folks' radars that this is coming down the pike. And even if they don't want to participate in any kind of comments on the survey itself, I think it does have the benefit of just getting us in folks' minds that this is going to be something to be looking for in the not-too-distant future and give them a sense of the timing.
Sure. I think that would be part of our you know, slides in the presentation anyways, to give people an overview timeline, target, and an intention. So they'll get that. It'll be interesting to see how much of it sticks in their minds and how effective the the pre-socialization of the survey would be.
Time will tell, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, they're going to get this just through the focus of us asking for their feedback on the first draft. We accomplish making them aware alone. So we'll see what added benefits have. The interesting thing is we're never going to have a clean baseline to say, you know, how much of an impact that had on response rates. So, or, you know, maybe what we can, it's probably not really worth it, but I guess we could try and develop in one of our baseline questions a way to capture that, you know, whether or not they came into the survey. At what point did they become aware of the survey? So if someone's taking it, maybe that's one of the baseline questions that we stick in at the front. Okay. Barry, you want to take a note of that?
Yes, I'm writing that down now.
And I'll volunteer to maybe when we review the baseline questions, we can bring that up again, see if we want to throw that in. I'll draft a version of that.
And
yes, we should. Barry,
go ahead, Michael.
I guess we should just make that a generic expanded question, like, how did you find out about the survey? And list off some options.
Okay, very good. And Steve's comment sparked a memory of mine as well. I think one of the things that Don was hoping to accomplish with the roadshow is when we go to communicate out that the availability of the webinar was to definitely spread the word that everybody is welcome to attend, but he was wanting to mostly focus on the techie community out there to really provide the legitimate feedback that we needed on these technical types of questions. So I just wanted to bring that up real quick.
Flag that? Okay. I don't entirely disagree with them. This survey is, by its nature, somewhat more orientated towards the functional focus, I guess, on these systems. This really is a type of requirements document, which I just think we have to be careful not to preclude, one community in favor of another. So, you know, I don't want to make this, I personally don't think we should be making this all about just the techies. And, you know, this is somebody who is a techie, so, maybe that rings a little more strongly. I think it's important to try and bridge the gap between the really focus on functionality versus, turning into hardcore tech that other stakeholders and end users won't understand. I think we did our best to try and, there are some technical questions in the survey, but we did our best to try and tone them down, I guess, so they're understandable.
Very good. As I mentioned, we'll take this one offline and get it squared away. Okay. Action item number two was up to you, Michael, basically to review the length of the survey and language. As you pointed out earlier, Centra made a pass at cleaning up some of the language, and Wilson has mentioned several times about the length of the survey, which were well over 60 questions now. Go ahead.
Yeah, that draft came out last week, and I'll be honest, last week was a bad week for me, given everything going on at ICANN right now, so I did not get a chance to go through it in detail. So I will be doing that this week.
Okay, great. Third action item was to Wilson, which was to provide examples of survey question types, which he did. That one is closed out. Fourth action item was to Wilson as well, and to review the survey code capability to enable a user to return to the survey. I'm not sure how many people on the working group were able to play around with his prototype, but it seems to work very well in terms of not only the layout of the questions and answers themselves, but as well as closing out the survey and returning back in to continue it. So that seems to be functioning in the design.
Yeah, Barry, for the record, for the minutes, can we, officially mark a strong kudos or thank you to Wilson? It was excellent, the demonstration. I think he did a really great job.
I concur, definitely. Action item five was basically out to the entire team and to mold the survey questions into the available question type. I won't claim that this is the case for all of the questions, but looking through this latest version 8.3, we're very close. So when we do go to import our draft into the survey tool, I don't suspect there will be hardly any rework for Wilson.
Right, and likewise, let's thank Cintra for, I don't know if she's hearing us with being on two calls, but let's thank her for that. That was a great amount of work as well. Thank you.
Very good. Okay, the sixth action item was to the whole team and the use of question is relevant as it's used in questions 6A and 6B. Avery had submitted this suggestion and her question types, and we were basically going to evaluate whether that should be relevant to the other questions as well. And I myself haven't gone that far deep into that yet, but that's something that the team probably still ought to consider.
This is Steve Metalis. Can I ask a question about that?
Absolutely, Steve.
So is the question whether this doubles the size of the survey for those questions where it's appearing, and is the point question on the table whether we should apply it not just in 6A and 6B but throughout? And thus
I think that's what Avery was suggesting.
Well, I recognize I wasn't here for a couple of calls, but I don't even see the point of this question where it appears now. I mean, perhaps one way to deal with this, and maybe you already discussed this, is simply to add another option in response to each question instead of 1 through 5, for example, in R6B. You just have 6. The question's not relevant. If someone thinks the question's not relevant, they can click that box. I'm just not sure what else we were trying to achieve with doubling the size of the survey in this way.
Well, I agree it's kind of clunky. Let me explain what I think we are trying to capture with it. And maybe you have an idea of how to capture it a little bit better. What we're trying to capture in the process of this type of gradated scale, Steve, was, given how strongly people rank a particular question, gives us an indicator of how important that piece of functionality is. Scale of, assuming that most of these questions hover around different pieces of functionality, it gives us a sense from the respondents of, across 70% of the respondents felt that, questions 15 through 20 ranked the highest in terms of relevance. So it helps give us a sense of de facto prioritization on some of this functionality, at least from their sense of relevance.
Well, but I think that's what the existing questions try to do. So you have a question like, it should be possible to include other forms of contact information for who is. Strongly disagree, mostly disagree, and through strongly agree. So you get a sense there of whether people, of how strongly people feel about that. And then to go on and say the question is relevant, first of all, anybody who thinks the question is irrelevant probably shouldn't have answered it, should they? And
well, yeah. So maybe I think part of the issue here is what she was suggesting is that second section would get tagged on to almost, all the questions or all if it physically, works with that question. So a lot of them, the first section would not be 1 to 5 like she's done it. She's done these ones like that and then done a relevance scale the same way. Some of the other questions, the options wouldn't by default create a relevance scale. Do you see what I mean?
Not sure that I do, but
Well, okay. Well, let's try and understand this. This is probably important for all of us too. Barry, can you pull up another question type? Avery didn't go beyond the stuff that she put in this. We had a couple of different ways of phrasing the questions, so I'm just looking for one of the other mechanisms. There we go. So it's obviously a more technical question, but this is a yes or no answer. There's no there's no opportunity for someone to say whether or not they feel this is an, there's no indicative way by reading the answers, Steve, to pull a relevance scale out of this without adding one.
Okay, but I don't see anything inherent in this question. I mean, you could ask people if they agree or strongly disagree about the ability to search by wildcard. I guess I'm just not getting why, if you have a 5-point scale or a yes or no, why you also need, especially if you have a 5-point scale, why you also need the relevance question. And I just think that if you add that to every question, you're going to reduce your response rate by, I would estimate, 90%. Most people will not put up with that on 60 questions to say, okay, now you want to know whether I think your question was the right one or not. I just think it's going to...
I agree. All right, so, Barry, maybe you and I can take that as an action item offside to try and think about ways of... short and sweet ways of leading a relevance indicator into each question. It's not a, 5-point scale like that, but go for the short, simple, and sweet approach like Steve's reaching for here, because I think that makes...
That's very good. We can also send a note out to the list and maybe have Aubrey provide some examples or the more reasoning behind including it as well that may help.
Oh, no, I think we all understand why she included it. I think, Steve, that's clear, right? I mean, you're suggesting that we just need to come up with something that doesn't turn people off doing the survey, right?
Yeah, I don't really see the need for this question, but if it is going to be in there, it should be in a way that is less intrusive.
Okay. All right, so that should probably be our focus around that.
Okay, I will carry this one over and we'll take it offline.
Okay. And we can grab Avery offline as well to talk this through as well. I do think we want to, one of the goals that we had, Steve, maybe I'll restate the overall goal, and maybe you can think of a completely different novel approach to solve for that goal that's even away from what we're talking about here. One of our goals in our charter was basically out of all the functionality is to try and get an indication from the survey which of the functionality people feel is most pressing. Mm. Not necessarily most important, though, time-based, which ones should be focused on first.
Okay, that might be a good dimension to try to capture.
Okay. So think about that, Steve. If you can think of a way to capture that, that's more graceful, that would be fantastic.
Okay, action item number 7 was out to the team, and that was to review the requirement 7 internationalized registration data for use in the survey. We didn't get any responses back in our downtime. I went ahead and brought in the interim IRD team's recommendations and basically molded those recommendations into the questions that are loaded into 8.3. Which we'll review here in a little bit.
Okay, great.
And see whether they're worthy or whether we should include them or not. Action item number 8 was out to you, Michael, which was to identify editors of the survey. I'm not sure how much more relevant this task may be given where we're at. And then lastly, go ahead.
Why don't you hit me on both of them and I'll answer to both of them. Go ahead.
And then lastly, identify test survey takers. And so far, Don has said that he would be willing to be a test taker.
Okay. So around March 5th, it was around then that we, I was getting a very, very poor response rate to almost no response from people that, historically have actually been quite responsive to any emails or queries or outreaches I've done to them. And that's when we decided to do the suspension of work, because it was everything going on around ICANN right now was eating up in a abnormal amount of everyone's time and energy. So so this week I'm going to re-reach out to people that I had tried to before and to finish these off, Barry.
That takes care of the action items for now. The only other thing that I'll point out just below the action items list is a revised proposed milestone schedule, and that's something that we probably ought to review to see if these dates are achievable from our downtime.
Well, why don't we hit that now, since it's on the screen, in order, Barry, and tell us what you shifted and as compared to what it was before.
Okay. Our previous milestone schedule, and then with the delay, actually caused about not quite 2 months delay from our original schedule. So essentially what I did is kept the same milestones in place, but added dates that I thought were hopefully achievable so that we can still try to make our 1 October deadline.
Right.
So with that in mind, if we're close enough with the survey draft, try to load the questions into the tool by the 23rd. We may have to extend that a little bit more depending on some more work with the questions. And then basically by the 25th, we have our internal survey control group somewhere around in this time frame is to conduct our webinars. And then still hopefully submit the draft survey to the GNSO Council by the 7th of May and open up the public comment period by the 8th of May.
And we need to have 42 days minimum for that. Okay.
That's correct. It's 21 days comments and 21 days reply to comments if there are comments. And all it takes is one to get that extra 21 days.
Yeah.
Then after the public comment period, we would create a summary of all the comments and take that back to the working group and rework our draft where needed. And then probably one of our most important milestones, definitely per our charter, is the independent review, which is also listed as on our agenda today for us to discuss as to what our approach is going to be to satisfy that requirement. And then lastly, basically the end of June, submit the final survey to the GNSO and open up the survey for 30 days. And from there, then review the survey results and publish the final report by 1 October.
Okay. I'm nervous about releasing the survey on June 30th. In terms of getting responses, how does everyone else feel about that? But that says to me, that is like vacation time for a large part of the world. The start of school breaks in Europe and North America, in particular.
This is Barry. Another option is maybe that we extend the duration in addition to just releasing it.
I suppose so, but so we've allowed ourselves review survey results July, release survey results August 6th, publish final report October 1st. Can we slide releasing the survey results closer to the, without changing the final report publishment date? Can we move that August 6th date downstream a little to maybe the end of August? Would that be acceptable, Barry, or typical? Because if we're going to leave it open for another, couple of weeks or something, then...
Absolutely. This is just dates that I had proposed, so it definitely wasn't shared amongst the working group or anything, but I do agree that there is slack from the beginning of August till the beginning of October.
Okay. I worry a little bit that we're tight on writing up a final report, but okay. Is there, I guess what we could do is we could actually start doing preliminary reviews of the survey results before we actually close the survey. Is there any reason we can't do that?
The only caution I would give there is, based on what Wilson had stated, that the output of the survey would be in some sort of spreadsheet-type format where we would need to analyze the results and those kinds of things. I imagine that's probably going to be a fair amount of effort to, you know, either not only
build the spreadsheet. Yeah.
To build the spreadsheets, the graphs behind it, and those kinds of things. We can certainly start to play around with it, but in terms of doing the first 30% or something and then waiting a little bit and then bringing in the other 30% may be pretty tedious.
This is Steve. Could I make a comment on these milestones?
Absolutely, Steve.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, that July is not the greatest time, and neither is July and August, I don't think, so I'm not sure that we get
it.
I mean, what is the 1 October, does that tie into something else, or does that tie into presentation of the material in Toronto, or I'm just wondering why that's in there, why that's kind of locked in.
This is Barry. It was defined in the charter that way.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, the GNSO, Steve, asked us to try and target for completion by then.
And just to add to this, I'm looking at it right now. It says publish final report by October 2012. Perhaps I was being a little ambitious throwing the first date on there, but we would have another 30 days of slack by getting it in by the end of October.
Make use of that.
Yeah, I'm with Steve. Can we change that? Why don't we? Well, we'll try to keep the survey open for instead of a month and a half, and push the final report publishment to the end of October.
Sounds good.
And yeah, Steve. I don't know. I mean, like, it's just. July and August, it'll be tough to get. It could go either way, to be honest. I mean, people sometimes are slower in July and August and might take the time to amble through a survey if we could get their attention. If we hit them during a busy time of the year where they're active, they may just actively decide not to do the survey because it just falls down their priority list too much. So it's hard to say. Certainly most people stay on top of their email even when they're, off in the summer these days. Okay. Yeah, I don't have any other brainwaves on the schedule. If anyone else doesn't have anything, we should move on.
Michael, since we're here, why don't we go ahead and take out the independent review portion of our agenda? Because it is listed as a pretty big milestone here. Basically, we just need to have the working group discuss and determine what this independent review may look like. With the independent review by other peers within the community okay, or does it need to be a more formalized independent review by survey experts? And depending on how the working group wants to approach that may affect a budgetary aspect. And so we need to try to get that nailed down. And if there are budget implications, then we need to start maybe working on that channel.
Well, here's my thought, Barry, and I'll throw it out for the group to consider. We were talking about this independent review prior to having made the decision as a group to put it out a draft version of the survey for public comment. And I almost think the public comment being 42 days and us doing the show to make sure people are aware of the public comment period gives us adequate review and feedback, which kind of makes the independent review intention redundant.
This is Steve. Is this also a requirement of our charter or something? I mean, I'm wondering. I mean, I hear your suggestion. We could maybe just drop this. Is that inconsistent?
That's what I'm thinking, Steve.
This is Barry.
Is it in our charter? I don't remember.
Yeah, this is Barry. This part, I'll read it from the charter. Before administration, the working group should have the final survey candidate reviewed by a qualified, independent third party and tested for comprehensiveness, clarity, and general applicability to the subject matter. Part of the review should include guidance by the independent party in developing a mechanism to determine if questions were comprehended by recipients as intended when reviewing the survey results. If the results for a particular question fail that test, the working group should discount the results from that question.
Wow, I think we over-engineered that a little bit, but okay. Okay, well, in all practicality, because we need to get this done, Barry, I mean, I think we assumed some help from ICANN staff in lining up an appropriate consultant for that. Can you guys, I mean, you have a whole stable of consultants around ICANN that you've used to assist with different things. Is it possible for staff to make some recommendations and get some quotes for us then to see if we can get the budget for?
I will definitely take that action item, but I will also mention as well that if the working group does feel that the vetting amongst the community is sufficient, we can easily just go back to the council and seek their approval for that, you know, with the appropriate justification.
I'm game to try that. What do you need from us to present that to them?
Probably a paragraph or two on exactly what our process will be by vetting this, and then once the working group agrees on what that statement should be, then we'll carry that over to Wendy to brief the council and get their approval.
Okay, I'll volunteer to draft that and then send it out to the list for everyone else to hack away at it. Unless someone feels strongly about still having getting an independent contractor in to look at this in as well as doing the public comment period.
Well, let me ask another way we might achieve this same goal. We have this internal survey test control group. I heard Don's name mentioned as someone who would take the survey, you know, as a guinea pig. But beyond that. You know, and this question of whether people understand the questions,
yep.
Which I think is a major concern and has not fully been addressed in this survey. I'll just say that as a general matter. Maybe if we just recruit some other people to take the test and see, and then have us, you know, then brief us on what they thought. Did they understand this question, or do they find the whole thing? You know, which questions did they find difficult to understand or to answer? I don't know if we could do something like that informally without hiring a consultant, just, you know, recruit our own guinea pigs. I know that's not, you know, a sociologist would look down his nose at that, but, you know, might be give us a rough idea of whether people outside our group understand what the heck we're asking about.
Well, Steve, I think that's a great idea. We're already doing it in a limited fashion, so... why don't I build on your idea here and say, can we ask all the members of the group to go out and recruit, each of us recruit a one or two guinea pig test takers outside of our working group?
I'm happy to do that. I think we should aim for maybe two or three, case,
yep.
You know, or three or four. But, I'll be happy to do that.
Yeah, well, there's no upper limit. If you can get three or four, great. If you get even one, at least we're starting to get some sampling, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And just to remind the group, you know, this isn't a milestone that's really required until we're ready to submit, you know, closer to our final version of the survey. So we certainly have plenty of time, and it's not necessarily a requirement for us to try to meet our milestone for the draft survey.
Okay, so we should fit this in after the public comment period, and after we've reworked our draft, but before we release it at the end of June. So it should be kind of we should be looking to get these folks to do the test survey somewhere in early June.
Sounds good.
And this is Anne, again, Anne Offsiger. I've already talked with some of my constituencies around this, and there's a real willingness to do something like that. So once we have a date firmed up and how we want to process that, I could get some people as well.
Awesome. Barry, can you put a formal, for those people that aren't on the call, can you put a formal email out asking for people to rally volunteers for that time period? Please.
And I just so that we are covered, I still recommend that, Michael, you do draft one or two small paragraphs about the approach, and that we still take that to the council, just so that it is slightly deviation from our charter.
Yeah, I absolutely.
Okay, great. All right, so that wraps up action items and milestones. I think we're ready for the agenda now.
Okay. So we want to hit three and review this list that you have up here on the right. Do you want to take us through it, Barry?
Okay. So as I mentioned in the downtime from the working group, staff worked on a few questions, and also Centra helped with the language and voice of the survey. Both of those versions are now combined into this one. And the only reason that I had listed these R7, R9, and R10 requirements for us to talk about is that we haven't talked about them as a team yet. The first one being R7, which is the IRD requirement. And as I mentioned earlier, basically, I took the recommendations from the initial report of the IRD working group and shaped them as yes, no, and different formats. So we definitely, as a working group, should review whether these are acceptable and applicable to the survey. And I'll stop there before going into R9.
Okay. So I'm looking at this, and the first thing that hits me in the face, Barry, I'm just trying to remember. I think Wilson confirmed that we could do hover buttons basically over certain words and phrases to give definitions.
That is correct. That capability is there.
Great. So I think that would be important for things like U-label or A-label, because I don't think a lot of the people taking the survey would know what that is off the top of their head. But they probably have heard it before, and if it was a definition there, they would probably understand it then.
This is Steve. I very much agree with that.
This is for, like I said, I didn't get a chance to go through this before the call. These look pretty clean to me, Barry.
This is Steve. I would say the same thing about EPP27 status code down in 6.
Oh yeah.
In 6A. Actually, I was on the IRD working group, and I don't remember what that is. So explain that and how
yep.
It ties into the main question of 6.
This is Barry. It almost sounds like this is a task that we should assign once we're comfortable with all of our definitions. That not only the when we import this into the tool, but our survey test takers as well before we even release our draft that we ought to go through and highlight which terms are worthy of Hubbard definitions.
Yeah, I think when we put it up for public comment, we should have some notation in here that has highlighted these terms, like you said, Barry, and indicates even to people in public comment that we're going to be providing in the survey tool, be providing definitions for all the highlighted terms.
I mean, is it feasible to provide those by the time we put this out? Because that otherwise it'll be harder for people to evaluate this if they just say, I don't even understand what this question is about. It's kind of it's the right question.
Steve, I could write the definitions for these terms. If we have a nice clean draft, I could work my way through and probably write definitions within a day or so. So Barry, put me down for that. I'll do that.
It's very good. And I think probably the best approach to that will be we'll give you the master version of the survey in Word. And just creating the comment out to the right, highlighting which word you're providing that definition for, then that'll stand out good for Wilson when he loads it into the tool.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Any other questions or comments on R7? Okay, let's move on to R9. And R9 and R10 belong to Don. I met with Don shortly after our discussion about the webinars, and this one was, R9 was specifically the only one that didn't fall within the format of our other questions. And John took the action item to start to create the questions, but we asked a higher level question as to, is there relevance of FitWhois technical questions for this survey given the current state of the environment with the new Gs coming online and their FIC requirement and those kinds of things, especially in the context of the quantity of questions that we have now. Will there be any value by any technical questions with respect to FitWhois? And if the working group thinks there is, then we probably ought to review through Don's notes and find out which are the key technical questions that we should ask and get those shaped.
I guess my perspective on it, Barry, would be that there are peripheral things that are of interest around FitWhois, obviously, like access levels and privacy information and that sort of thing. But that's covered in our other questions. So I guess I'd want to take another quick look at Don's questions here before I make a definitive. We should support removing it to make sure that we've covered all those FitWhois considerations in the other questions, but if all those elements are covered, then this does seem redundant.
This is Steve. I think there may still be some relevance here because, again, I think the end goal here is a new protocol that is going to apply to the legacy TLDs as well as the new ones, obviously. And if while it's true that almost every registry now, and certainly once the new ones come online, even a higher proportion of them will operate FitWhois, it's still the case that right now the vast majority of gTLD registrations are in FinWhois registries. So moving from one to the other may be an issue. I would like to hope that by the time this new protocol becomes operative, the three outliers will have been brought into the mainstream, but I don't know that we can necessarily assume that. So at least three here about whether there's anything in the design that we're talking about or the requirements, or should there be anything in the requirements that would facilitate transitioning from a thin to a thick registry, possibly that's still relevant.
Yeah, Steve, I agree. I just don't know if that's being covered in other work. Barry, maybe, or somebody else on the call even, I know that there was a delayed vote in the GNSO on a PDP regarding thick who is for ComNet. I think there the vote happened, and part of it, the outcome was to open a PDP but delay its start to a certain date, if I recall. Does anyone know what ended up happening?
That's correct.
This is Susan. If I recall, it's being delayed to like November.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. The reason is that the .com agreement has to be renegotiated before then.
Right, and they wanted to. I mean, the statement I was, Steve, I was seeing in the RYSG. Meetings when they were discussing this and how their position on it, the registries, and VeriSign was very forthright in that they, in saying that their concern was that they didn't want it to actually be a result of their contract negotiation. They wanted it to be something that the community indicates what they would like, and that they would be happy to comply with what the community decision was.
Well,
that's
where it guarantees that we will need this question, because that means we won't see thick who is in .com in this decade. and that's why they took that position, which is very unfortunate, and I'm hoping in the next few months we can mobilize the community to overcome that type of recalcitrance. But
Well, as far as I understand, the intent of that PDP that was passed is to figure out how to move ComNet over to thick who is.
And if it works on the usual time scale, we'll have it by 2016.
yeah, okay. I can't argue with you there. Okay. So, yeah, probably number three probably should stay. Why don't we agree to open this, Barry, for some follow up comments on the list, and then you know what, Steve, I'll go through this with Don and see if we can't trim it back a bit. How's that?
Yeah, I mean, I think these are maybe not in the format that is needed, but. I think that the concept of ensuring that the requirements are compatible with migrating from thin to thick is important.
Yeah. Also, Barry, I mean, like, I'm reluctant because this was a key element in the report, and we're supposed to be building a survey off the report, so I don't want to just throw it away entirely.
Okay, very good. Any more comments about R9? Alrighty, now we get to step back in time to who was, and this is my stab at basically the data model that was used in question R1 or R2 and just shaped it for who was.
So
this hasn't been vetted by anybody, and this was me creating an isolation, so I could be way off target here, but I wanted to have something for review by the team to see whether it was worthy.
I don't think it's bad at all. I think we have the same issue with making sure that we do definitions on certain things through these, but also... in the intro, Barry, one note for you is I think the intro should explain what who was is, what it does.
And this is Steve. I wasn't clear how this differed from R6B, Romanet 6 and 7, about the history or pedigree of the domain name, such as previous owners. That different than who was?
Which numbers was that again, Steve?
6 and 7, Romanet 6 and 7. Down at the bottom of this page.
I think it's a little different, Steve. I think in this case they're talking about a current view to who is, and within the current view it includes some past ownership information, or past ownership's not the right term, past responsible party or registrant of record or however you want to define it. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think who was is literally displaying what the who is information would have looked like a year and a half ago.
Yeah,
verbatim.
Okay. I see the difference. That could be explained in the definition of who was. Who was just a snapshot. What did the record look like on April 4th, 2010 or whatever?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so we need to, in the introductory sentences, we need to explain that a bit better, Barry.
Okay. Okay, any other comments for R10?
Well, again, I think there's several, I think Michael already mentioned this, there's several other terms that probably need to be defined here.
Okay, that's it for the...
Go ahead.
Who would you like to go ahead, me?
Yeah, is that Cintra?
Yes, this is Cintra. If you could just scroll up to the top of this page, there's a reference to section 4.6. But it needs to say 4.6 of what?
That's a very good point.
Okay, thank you, Cintra. Alrighty, well, that takes care of the three that we had listed for our agenda. We've talked about the webinar, and we talked about the independent review. So back to you, Michael.
Okay, so let me open it up for new business, and afterwards we'll go to a review of the action items. So, Steve, you had suggested that maybe you want to talk through some other things.
Yeah, I did go through some other things, but it might be easier to simply send those to the list. But my general impression was that there's still I think this really needs to be scrubbed to become more intelligible to the non-technical community.
Right.
And part of that could be through these definitions, but part of it could simply be unpacking some of the terms here that occur. For example, I'll just give an example. On R3,
okay.
Question 1, you support a standard, formal, extensible data structure and schema for who is responses. I think that needs to be explained. I think people understand what standard might mean. Yes, they might understand formal, but extensible is not a term that everybody is familiar with. The difference between a structure and a schema is not something everyone is familiar with. So I think this really needs to be looked at in terms of if you're seeking a broad range of responses, I think then this there needs to be a little more explanation of a lot of these terms.
Steve,
covering is maybe a very good way to do it because then it doesn't clutter up the thing for people that already understand it. But something like that needs to be done.
I think we can do twofold. So I already have an action item to go through and write out definitions for the hover elements, I guess. Steve, while I'm doing that, I'll look at the intro language on every question and see if I can't simplify for the non-technical user. You know, given the job I do every day, it's a huge everyday responsibility for me to try and translate the technical into implications for people in business and functionality and ramifications. So let me take an editing shot at that while I'm doing the definitions anyways.
Yeah, I think that would be very helpful. And another question I had was about R8.1. It's, again, there's a number of terms that need to be defined here, but it wasn't clear to me whether we were talking here about a projected situation in the future or the current situation. You know, for example, question two, if your access rights are circumscribed, e.g. only to particular TLDs, that sounds like we're talking about what happens today. We're asking the respondents, are there some TLDs you don't have access, who is data you don't have access to? Is that what we meant, or are we saying that in a future, under a future protocol, there should be some of these restrictions?
Well, there are TLDs that have tiered access who is now. So I suspect that's what they're referring to, Steve. But who drafted this question, Barry?
Yes. I have to pull up the old version. Give me a second.
I, Steve, you're right. I think it's confusing to kind of switch between the future and asking kind of a current status question.
The first one says, do you have a use case? And that sounds like, all right, in the future. Two is sounds like it's asking about right now. Three is this elevated access right to be granted? Again, that sounds like the future. So anyway, I just think
yeah.
Clarify.
I think we should make the first ones all future ones, and then
I think that's what's meant there.
Yeah, and then if we go to subsequent, like the lower questions could build on the previous questions if you wanted to, right? So. Okay.
Stephen Van Egmond with
the
task lead on these.
Okay. I when I'm doing the editing pass, I'll Barry, if we could just mark that one so I don't miss it, I'll adjust that one too.
Hi, Michael. This is Cintra. Is it possible for us to go back to R3 question one that Steve was talking about?
Absolutely. Let's go up there.
Okay. Yeah, should this question one, should it be broken up into three questions then? So should it be, do you support a standard data structure and schema for WHOIS responses? Do you support a formal data structure and schema for WHOIS responses? Do you support an extensible data structure and schema for WHOIS responses?
I think from as a technical person's point of view, I would say standard formal data structure is kind of one element in of itself, not two, but extensible is definitely a choice, another choice. So you should split it at least into two.
Okay.
Because you could always say, yeah, I mean, standard implies that it needs to be a formal data structure, because otherwise how do you standardize? Whereas extensible is whether or not you choose to make your data defined data structure something that people can build on it. It may seem at first glance to be sensible to always allow someone to extend on an existing standard, but sometimes actually it's a good idea not to allow people to add extensions to a standard without going through a whole process of upgrading the entire standard.
Okay.
IPv6 would be a great example of that. That's a good catch, Cintra. Thank you.
This is Barry. Cintra, will you take that task of reshaping question one into a few and send me those changes?
Mm, I don't mind doing that, but I would like to build on Michael's work. So I think, Michael, how do you prefer to do this? Do you want to put in the definitions first?
Yeah, when I'm doing my editing pass. Yeah, Cintra, when I'm doing my editing pass, if you just put a note in the current version, I'll split it up. And then, Cintra, can you review what I've done and see if I've done it to your vision?
Okay, sure, no problem.
I guess what I'm volunteering for the group is to really build the next pass, full editing pass, and then let the group have at it. Any other areas?
This is Susan. I have a question.
Go ahead, Susan.
I'm just noticing there's still some consistency amongst the type of answers, a yes, no, or yes, no, indifferent, and then Aubrey's extensive ones. Is there going to be any effort to similarize, make these more similar?
We think... three different types that Wilson had come up with. And earlier in the conversation, about 40 minutes ago, we were talking about trying to simplify Avery's attempt to capture relevance, or I guess what she was trying to do is capture prioritization from the respondent's point of view on these different features and functions.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
But even on the yes no answers, there's still difference amongst those, and I think it would be more consistent and we would look more together if we had consistency across all of those, even if there's yes no and indifferent across all the yes no answers or all the yes no questions.
Yeah. So if what we end up doing is a single single extra element instead of the whole scale thing. That's what Steve was saying. If there's a whole scale thing after every one, people will get uninspired and not finish the survey.
I completely agree with you. I was aiming on this. But I'm like, even if you go to R2 and then you go to R3, R2 is yes, no, and indifferent, and then R3 is yes, no. And I'm just saying across the whole survey, whenever there's a yes, no, we should have it standard so that it's always... they're going to expect a certain standard across the questions.
Yeah,
this is Steve. I'd agree with that.
Okay, so when I'm going through my editing pass, I'll put in different, we'll do all the yes-nos as yes-no and different.
Hi, this is Cintra. That's a question for the group as well. Do we want to make indifferent an option?
I think so. I mean, I'm in favor of because that what that implies to us is that it's not a particularly important issue for the respondent.
I agree. I could also assist with possibly getting what Aubrey wants out of her point. Not the same 5-point scale, but at least it will indicate whether or not it's a question that matters to the respondent.
Yeah. We could quickly end up with a whole bunch of tricky answers again. If people could dwell on this a little bit more, we're looking for a graceful way to capture people's how strongly they feel about each of these issues.
This is Anne. One thing that concerns me is because of the technical nature of this, I wonder if we're going to have a skewed and different result if people just don't get it. Don't understand.
We were supposed to have an option on the technical questions. We talked about this, but we didn't want to alienate anyone about having we ended up with the indifferent, actually, or don't care answer, because we were going to say, provide a radio button that says too technical, or I'm not technical. And the way that we talked about resolving that was to create the baseline questions at the beginning to allow us to understand whether or not a respondent is not technical. Okay. So we didn't want to make people feel, I guess, diminished in each question.
Right. Okay. I think that's probably the graceful way to do it, but I do think that there will be some people that will select that option because they just don't understand, and we'll just, I guess acknowledge that's probably the case.
Yeah, some people don't, some people are quite comfortable saying, I don't understand that, right?
Okay.
Other people we're worried could get offended, right?
And this is Barry, one slice of how we can analyze those for those that don't understand is to compare it against their profile and where they come from, which we may be able to do when we get spreadsheet access to the raw data.
Yeah,
that was the goal, right? Was to basically try to adjust for that. That puts the onus on us in putting some type of adjustment factor on our results to deal with that. We're going to have to be very transparent with any kind of adjustments we make in our analysis on the final report, though.
Mm-hmm.
Does anyone have any other areas they want to comment on? Okay. Sounds like we're done with new business. Barry, do you want to go through the action items?
I'll give it a shot. Barry, let's see. From our previous list, we still have the webinar task, which is pending, and both you and I will get with Don to determine our next course of action for that, and hopefully some sort of schedule about how we want or when we want to accomplish that. The next carryover is the question relevant, which we just talked about, and both Michael and Barry will get together to get with Aubrey and also determine the use of the yes, no, and different option. Next carryovers is basically to identify short-term editors of the survey before we submit the draft. And editors/ test survey takers before we submit the draft. That carried over into an action item for myself, which is send out an email to the list to rally volunteers for our more formal test taking and to accomplish our independent review. Next. I have the action item to add the question to the profile about how did the survey test taker become aware of the survey with a list of options. I'm sorry, these are kind of all over the place. I've taken some pretty dirty notes today. Next action item is I just reviewed that one for Michael and Barry to review the question is relevant. And the indifferent with the yes-no. The next action is with Michael and Barry. And I'm sorry, that's those are crap. Next one. Basically, Michael, you have the master to-do, which is to create the next version. And before I get into this to-do, I think I'll do is I'll run through the various small changes that I needed to accomplish, which, for example, was adding a definition to who was, sending out a note about R9 and for the priorities. Migrating SIM to SIG for R9 and some other changes to this version. I'll send you this next version, and then you can take it from there to review through the definitions or find those keywords that would require a hover definition that you'll also take a shot at editing to simplify the technical language. And I've identified a few specific questions that need attention that we discussed through in the call today, which is R3 splitting up question 1, R8.1, the past versus future context, and as well as the yes, no, and different, which I'll take care of in the version that I send to you. And then lastly, as I think I maybe already mentioned, I'll improve the definition for who was in R10.
Beautiful. Okay, is everyone okay with those action items? Anyone feel that we missed anything? Okay, hearing nothing. We are finishing 10 minutes early, so we kept the schedule really well today. Thank you, everyone. It's good to get back in the saddle and get some forward work going. Once again, I want to thank everybody for their volunteer efforts. You know, I've sat in a lot of working groups, and a lot of times the chairs don't bother to thank you for their efforts, and I think it's fantastic. You guys are all making a huge difference here and making this effective, and we couldn't do it without resources like yourselves, so thank you again for your time.
Thank you, Michael.
Great. Thank you, everyone.
Good day, everyone.
Take care.
Yes. Yeah.